And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is Friday, September 23rd, our final waiver wire show of the 2022 season. Got a few more episodes coming before the season actually comes to a close, and of course we'll have a few off-season episodes sprinkled in between October, November, and December, as we have the last couple of years, but it does feel like the season is winding down, especially for Al. Al, you were saying before we started recording that it's actually fall outside. It's not just this prolonged summer that I've been experiencing.
Leaves are turning in New England. I'm sporting a fleece, which feels like I haven't done in, I don't know, probably since the first weeks of baseball season.
Yeah, so I guess the weather is changing the way it should for the end of the season. It's been a great year so far, and at least there's a few more intriguing players to discuss on the wire for this weekend, including one that will likely debut on Friday night for the Rockies. We have not seen a lineup for the Rockies since we're starting this recording just after 4 o'clock Eastern. They're playing a little bit later in the evening, so we might not get a clear answer on this before we go, but Ezekiel Tovar was promoted from AAA on Thursday, didn't play in Thursday night's game. We've talked about him before. There's power, there's speed, a really impressive season at AA, a very brief stop at AAA. Now that we know he's actually up, this time last week I said I didn't think I could justify picking him up in redraft leagues simply because we didn't have a confirmation. We have that now. The schedule we talked about last week is still in place. It is six games against the Dodgers to eventually end the season for Colorado, so not exactly the easiest of pitching matchups, but as far as your skills go, Tovar at least does a lot of things that could help your team in the remaining days of the season. So what types of leagues are you interested in him?
Honestly, 15-teamers. That's it for me, because between the fact that, like you said, a very, very brief time in AAA, who knows what sort of transition Tovar's going to be able to make. He won't have much time to make it. And then there is that schedule. Nine games remaining once our lineups lock on Monday. All of them on the road. Six of them against the Dodgers. Three of them against the Giants. Tough ballpark. Tough rotation. It's about everything that could be a negative in terms of Tovar coming up and the timing of it. So, in a different kind of situation, I would certainly consider him for 12-teamers, but not in this situation.
Yeah, definitely not the matchups you're looking for, and not being in Colorado for a stretch run also is a little bit of a bummer, but a guy that I think is going to be firmly on the radar for us in 2023, given how quickly he moved through the Rockies system to make this debut at the end of 2022. Let's talk about a player in Oakland getting an opportunity, Jordan Diaz. A's have been moving him around a bit defensively. I think he's made four starts. I'm looking at it right now. One at first base, two at second base. One of those starts came as a DH. If you're watching us on YouTube, you see that it says third base on the screen. I think on a lot of sites, he's actually eligible at third base because of past levels of contributions in the minor leagues, but there's still some questions defensively about whether he's actually going to stay there long term, as you can see just with the movement in his first handful of games. But he's probably there because he's going to hit regardless of where he plays defensively. And the bottom line is the playing time looks really safe. So I'm intrigued about Diaz, mostly in 15-team mixed leagues. I think you could maybe throw him in there in a 12-teamer if you're just desperate for help at third base. We've talked about that being a problem position throughout this entire season. But I do think there's still some possible warts that need to be addressed before Diaz can settle in and be the player that I expect him to be in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, similar situation, just tough to come up with this little bit of time left. At least he has been up for a little while so far, but he hasn't done a lot yet. And there's not much time left on the clock for him to really make the adjustments that, you know, again, if he'd been called up earlier, maybe he'd have the opportunity to make. But also in terms of Diaz, I would agree with you. Probably the appeal there is 15 teams and deeper. But it's also very much dependent on what your category needs are. And that's something we've been talking about all month. It's a perennial thing. You know, we get to the last month of the season. We're looking at the standings. We're looking where we can make some movement and where to basically punt from here forward. And the one area where I feel confident that Diaz could help you is batting average. And there's only so much a player can help you in batting average over a 10-day period. But if it's really bunched up, you have to do what you got to do. And Diaz is somebody in that situation I would look to, like I said, in a 15-team league.
Yeah, and the main skills warp that I was referring to really is the limited walk rate. I think for a corner bat or a potential corner bat that does hit for a high average, does a good job keeping the strikeouts in check, it's going to take either adjustments to the eye, he has to be more patient, or he has to give you a little bit more power if he's going to be really stable across the board for us as a fantasy contributor. But very young for a player debuting, just turned 22 in the middle of August, and a player that I'm pretty excited about for the long haul, even if I'm sort of tempering my enthusiasm for the stretch run here over the next 10 days. Let's talk about Charles LeBlanc in Miami. Eligibility now at second and third base in many leagues, so a little bit of versatility, which is nice to have for these final couple of lineup periods. We're seeing him play almost every day. I think he started 9 of the last 11 games, entering play on Friday, hitting pretty high in that Marlins order, and he's got a 10% barrel rate so far as a rookie. So you got power, you've got speed, underlying numbers look solid, and you've got multiple positions. I'm curious what your interest level is in LeBlanc compared to guys like Tovar and Diaz, who I think have a lot more prospect appeal.
Yeah, I mean, strangely enough, I would be more interested in LeBlanc, I think, for this last scoring period than the other two, legitimate prospect types. I think that the playing time, we don't worry about the playing time for Diaz, but I'm certainly more certain of the playing time for LeBlanc than I am for Tovar. And we've seen what LeBlanc can do at the major league level, at least for a little while now. And I'm pretty confident that if you, again, needed somebody to hit for average and help you in that category, maybe give you a stolen base, or if you're really lucky, maybe a couple, then LeBlanc would be a good player to pick up and start in some deeper leagues this week.
Yeah, the swing and miss, a bit of a concern, but he does do a lot of things well and higher up in the order than a lot of their players were looking at on the wire. So that playing time should be pretty firm for Charles LeBlanc the rest of the way. As we've talked about the last few weeks, keeping an eye on players coming off the IL is a great way to find some late season value. Harrison Bader is back for the Yankees. He started 3 consecutive games in center field. I've always liked the tools that he's brought to the table. His defense always keeps him in the lineup. I think the general philosophy I've had with Bader is don't rely on him for batting average. You'll get some power, you'll get some speed. It's just a question of how much it's going to be. This year, he was on a 30 steal pace before getting hurt. He's 15 for 17 as a base stealer with a 10 home run pace, which I think would make him a very productive roto player if that's what he's going to do going forward. And one thing that Bader was also doing before getting hurt was he sustained the improved strikeout rate that we saw a year ago. And that was something that I think many of us were hoping to see. We just didn't know what was going to happen over another prolonged run of playing time. So I think the skills growth we've seen from Bader is actually pretty encouraging, even though he's shifting to be a little bit more of a possible like mid-range batting average guy with speed who offers a little bit of power as opposed to a batting average liability with a more even power speed mix.
Yeah, it makes a big difference because he's one player that we won't necessarily talk about as just merely being for a categorical need over this final stretch. The fact that he now remains in a good offensive environment, arguably maybe even a better one than the one that he came from. And the thing with Bader is that I have viewed him as sort of a streamer type for 12 teamers. So he's kind of a little bit in a no man's land that he's, for one thing, probably not available in 15 team leagues. And it would be absolutely a no brainer to be starting him there. But 12 teamers, it's, everything's got to be kind of right in place. And with him pretty fresh off of the IL, I would not be making more than a contingency bid for Bader in a 12 team league this week, but he'd at least be on my radar.
Yeah, definitely a target though, leagues with 14, 15 teams where you're starting 4 or 5 outfielders, because I think the counting stats get a boost being with another good team. It's not like he lost anything in terms of lineup quality, but he's also in a more hitter-friendly ballpark now. So I think that's what gives him more of a nudge in the right direction now that he's a member of the Yankees. I was wondering if we would have any first base options. You found a few that are standing out in recent weeks. Carlos Santana? Like last week we were talking about Elvis Andrus. This week we're talking about Carlos Santana as someone that can help you possibly get to a fantasy championship.
I'm laughing because that's the lead to the final waiver column of the year is, saying that Andrus was kind of an unlikely waiver target. If you look back, a month and a half ago, but he was one of the primary people we talked about last week's show. And Andrus, the first game this week, got a couple of stolen bases, couple of hits. He's still pretty broadly available. So Andrus, I guess, probably could be added to this list. But Santana, kind of a similar deal, right? An unexpected rebound story late in the season, hitting for a ton of power, playing every day for the Mariners now, even getting some starts against lefties. So you cannot count on him for batting average. I think he's absolutely a no-go if you're trying to move up in batting average. But if what you need is home runs and RBIs, then I think Santana is a priority even in 12-teamers.
Yeah, we talked a lot about pitchers that you would trust if your ratios were already a mess and it didn't matter if they blew up. I think you have to think about Carlos Santana that way with the batting average. Like if your batting average is already low or you feel like it's just locked in somewhere in the standings pool, okay, great. Then go ahead and take advantage of the opportunity for Santana to offer up some homers, some RBIs, maybe even a handful of runs in these final games of the season as well. The player that I like a little bit better from just a categorical balance perspective, though, is Josh Naylor. If they are both available, I'm more interested in Josh Naylor as a late-season fill-in on the corner if I have to choose between the two.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there's a big difference between the two in roster rate. So if you needed somebody in a 14 or 15 teamer, Naylor almost certainly wouldn't be available there. But Naylor is surprisingly available in 12-teamers. And yeah, clearly a much better ad than Santana, maybe not quite as much projectable power for this last week and a half. But like you said, batting average, run production, hitting consistently in the fourth spot for the Guardians. The Guardians have been one of the highest scoring teams in the majors for the month of September. So he's in a prime spot in the batting order for an offense that's clicking pretty well lately. And I was actually surprised to see that Naylor looked at a leaderboard on Fangraphs by position. So it doesn't necessarily jive with current fantasy eligibility. But among players they had classified as first baseman, Naylor ranked 12th in RBIs among first basemen if you go from May 1st forward. Now, he didn't have a very good April, so that's why I make the arbitrary cutoff point. But still, if you look at the season from May forward, he's right up there with players like Rhys Hoskins and Jose Abreu in terms of RBIs. And, he's in a great spot to finish up the season just as strong as he's been for the last 5 months.
Yeah, I've kind of been interested in him as a deep league breakout bat for a couple of seasons now. I think the slow start this year might have been because of that knee injury, right? He was coming off of either a knee surgery or just a knee injury. I can't remember which it was off the top of my head, but that might have explained why that production lagged early on. He's going to get to 20 home runs for the first time in his career. If he can just hit one more, steals a handful of bases, keeps the K rate down. He's walking more than he did each of the last two seasons. And all this power is actually supported by a career best barrel rate, 8.5%. So I know Andrés Giménez is getting more attention for his breakout, and it's deserved because it's to a much higher level. But Josh Naylor's another Guardians player who has taken a nice step forward for them. And it's part of the reason why I think this team is being overlooked. I'm guilty of overlooking them myself because I thought the White Sox were going to get hot and kind of play to their level. I even thought the Twins were going to be capable of passing the Guardians in the final weeks of the season. As we saw this week, that's not happening. The Guardians are going to win the AL Central, and I don't think anybody wants to see them come playoff time either, given their current form. Let's talk about Taylor Ward for a moment. I imagine Taylor Ward was universally rostered when he was red hot at the beginning of the season, and then over the course of the summer in shallow leagues, he was finally dropped to the point of maybe being 65 to 75% rostered. Do you have a case for him to be rostered in shallow leagues again?
Yeah, I do. I do, actually. Now, he's not hitting with quite the same level of power that he did in the first half when he was, I think you're right, I think he was either universally rostered or really close to it. So he hasn't gotten quite back to that level, but he's hitting for average lately. The barrel rate actually is pretty good, not as high, not double digits like it was in the first half, but I think around 8 or 9% in the second half. So he's probably been underperforming a little bit in terms of power production. And sort of like what we were talking about with Naylor, you know, playing every day in a good spot in the lineup for the Angels. So somebody who would be reliable, not necessarily for home runs, but I think for runs, RBIs, and even batting average over the last stretch here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you've got questions, by the way, and you're watching us live, feel free to drop those in the chat. We'll try to answer a few of those as we move a little further along. A couple of other hitters I wanted to get to real quick. David Villar, who's been kind of a regular on this show, starting to get to his power a little more often at the big league level. And I was somewhat skeptical of him coming off of, I thought, like a little bit of an underwhelming stretch during his first run with the Giants earlier this season. But they've really turned over a lot of playing time to him down the stretch.
Yeah, which for the Giants is really saying something, because usually there's only maybe two, maybe three players over a couple week stretch that get true everyday playing time. As we know, a lot of moving parts there in that on that roster. So yeah, VR is getting pretty much everyday playing time and earning it by hitting for average, hitting with power since September 5th, a 286 average, 5 homers, 9 runs, 10 RBIs. So definitely looking like what he did in Sacramento earlier the year, where he was just hitting for all that power, that wasn't necessarily a fluke. And getting back to what we were talking about at the top of the show, DBR, with Ezekiel Tovar and players needing time to adjust. And VR looked like he wasn't, it looked like he was overmatched when he first came up. And now he's hitting much more like the player you would have expected, given what his AAA stats look like.
Yeah, I think we could say something similar about Brian De La Cruz getting an opportunity with the Marlins right now, too. I've been intrigued for pretty much the past year. I just thought there was enough in that minor league profile where if he got enough playing time, he'd actually be a net positive player for us in a lot of leagues. And he's been playing very well recently.
Yeah, he has. I mean, it's really been up and down for De La Cruz. So he did not make it into the column this week. But he has made it other weeks. So it's, you know, seems like he's good for, you know, 2-3 weeks at a time. And then he really falls off. But he's on a heater now, 9 for his last 29 with 3 home runs. And over that stretch, 6 barrels. So that's actually more than a barrel every for every 4 batted balls. That's obviously a great ratio, albeit with a really small sample. So if it's just you want a hot hand play in a 15-team league, I think that De La Cruz is going to be one of your better options.
Yeah, at least a contingency-type bid player for me. I would say if Harrison Bader had been dropped when he's on the IL and you're looking at Bader versus De La Cruz, I prefer Bader. I think the skills are more stable at this point, but I do think De La Cruz is a perfectly fine backup option that you could put on that list to see, just in case someone else outbids you, and just to make sure you get somebody who's playing a lot right now and doing some good things with that opportunity. Let's get to Edward Olivares in Kansas City. Is it going to be different this time? This is what I ask people every time it comes up. Is there any reason to think this is going to be the time for Edward Olivares to make his mark?
I mean, it could be. The thing that I worry about, and again, can't see this enough times on this last episode, but you know, teams like the Royals, they're trying out a lot of different things. So somebody like Olivares, who seems to be an everyday player right now, you know, who knows if Kyle Isbell maybe can take some playing time away or somebody else on that roster. But I mean, now's as good a time as any, right? I mean, I do believe in the skills still. And the fact that Olivares hasn't really gotten that extended look before means that I still hold out hope that, you know, he can approximate some of those better numbers from the minor leagues if just given the chance. So maybe he's just going to continue to get that playing time over the last week and a half.
You mentioned the Royals giving some other players opportunities. Nate Eaton is among them, but he is running and running often right now.
Yeah, and I was, frankly, I was surprised by the volume of the stolen bases, and I don't think I'm alone in that because he is 3% rostered on CBS, I think, and I'm going by memory here, I think 1% on ESPN, so pretty almost universally available. So a lot of us, I think, have been sleeping on the stolen bases there. He is tied with Bubba Thompson for the most stolen bases in the month of September with 8. He's got 10 total on the season. So if you're looking at a 15-team league or maybe even a little bit deeper, Thompson is still under-rostered. But if it's a deep league where you know Thompson has been picked up, then Eaton's right there. And he's one of the few players, available players, who could realistically give you multiple stolen bases rest of season.
I wonder if there's some similarities to the John Birdie profile. I mean, Eaton's a little bit old, but he got to the big leagues faster than Birdie did, plays multiple positions. The minor league production is so hard to trust because he was 25 this season when he was very good at both AA and AAA. But when you look at what he was doing, he was 12 for 13 as a base stealer in 37 games at AA. He was 11 for 15 in 54 games at AAA, and he's 10 for 10 in the big leagues in 34 games. Clearly, this is the thing that he can do that provides some value. But where the Birdie similarities come in is he's got at least what I would call the non-zero pop, maybe even a tick above that level, and he gets on base. And I think that was something I always underrated about John Birdie compared to the other late-season speedsters that would come up and get relied on at the end of a season, is that a lot of those guys, they had major skills flaws getting on base. Eaton doesn't have that, and I think he might actually be a nice glue guy for them going the next season. I don't know if they would really look at him and say, we're starting him at third base every day, or we're starting him in right field every day, but maybe he gets 4 starts a week because he's the primary backup at multiple spots.
Yeah, the fact that he does have that versatility makes that situation somewhat plausible. And yeah, I think he does, you know, bring more than the stolen bases. He's hitting for average, probably an unsustainably high average so far. But that's the thing, you know, somebody with speed, even if they strike out a little too much, they can still hit for a decent average. So, and he did show a little bit of power AAA. I don't want to oversell it. I wouldn't pick him up expecting him to knock a couple of homers in the next week and a half. But like I said, 2-3 stolen bases is actually, for him, a realistic expectation. And maybe you do get a little bit more in addition to that.
If you're looking for speed on the NL side, and probably in some deeper mixed leagues as well, Michael Ciani could have a similar sort of impact. Most of this season has been spent at AA, 121 games there. He's 49 for 61 as a base stealer during his time there, 12 homers. So again, some pop to go along with all that speed. And Nick Senzel is out for the season with his latest injury, unfortunately. So there's another spot that's opened up in the Reds outfield. So how do you compare Eaton to Ciani if you're looking at speed options in a mixed league where both might be available?
Yeah, it's pretty close. I definitely give the edge to Eaton just because he's been up for a while. We've seen what he could do, whereas Ciani just came up, hasn't played a whole lot at AAA. So it's just more, I think, just the certainty, and I think a little bit more certainty maybe in terms of playing time as well for Eaton. But so you can't argue with the stolen base potential, and if that's what you need, I mean, these are what these players are going to be targeted for. So I kind of like the way that you framed it, that Ciani maybe is the NL version, and I think that they both do have a little bit more appeal than just mono leagues. But yeah, in a 15 teamer, if I needed steals, that it'd probably be, you know, Eaton pick number one, with the, you know, 1A being Ciani.
We talked about the possible power you get from Carlos Santana earlier, and I certainly trust his track record a lot more to deliver down the stretch than I do the profile of someone like Matt Waldner, who's just getting this opportunity for the first time with the Twins. But the injuries that have piled up on Minnesota recently have opened the door for Wallner to be an everyday player. There is swing and miss in that profile, but when he connects, he can do damage. What's your interest level in Wallner this week?
Not very high. Now, if you ask me again on Sunday, it could be different because the Twins have a number of players on the IL who could come back for this last week and a half, or at least some portion of it. So you get one or two of those players coming back, and I think that Wallner's just not going to have very much playing time. But I actually thought of Jake Cave as maybe a candidate for the column this week. He hasn't put up great surface numbers, but he's been hitting with a lot of raw power. But I worried about the same thing with Cave, which is, you know, if you've got some IL activations, how much playing time is he really going to get? So, and I think Cave may actually be more of a priority for me than Wallner, and I have a little bit more certainty in the playing time. So just for that reason alone, I don't have much interest in Wallner.
Yeah, this is a really important time of the year to keep an eye on the news day to day going into the Fab run on Sunday night, because players might get shut down for the season. Some guys that look like they're going to come back, we might get an update that they had a setback, or the team's just going to be careful with them because the playoff calculus changes just in a matter of days. So I highly recommend that you keep close tabs on the news. I mean, I think you do that most weeks anyway, but be extra careful just because the circumstances for playing time can change very quickly at this point in the season. Before we get into some pitchers we like, we got a question here from Matt. Matt is in his head-to-head finals and can add one stream, the focus being mostly on quality starts and then on strikeouts. Choices include Luis Ortiz at the Cubs, Davis Martin against the Tigers, or Dre Jameson against the Giants. Those are actually pretty good options, Al.
They are. I think for me, it does come down to Ortiz and Jameson, and those are both good matchups. The Giants are just not doing much offensively lately, so I think that those are almost on a par. I think I'd give a slight edge to Jameson here.
That's my gut, too. It's not that much of a gap. So, I mean, if it's the kind of thing, if Matt, if you like Luis Ortiz a little more, you're not wrong to go that direction. It's that close. The other difference, though, for me, just from a pure matchups perspective, Jameson being at home versus Luis Ortiz being a young pitcher on the road. I mean, I know the Cubs are not difficult as a matchup right now. I know Wrigley Field's a good place to pitch so long as the wind's blowing in. Usually the wind is blowing in, but I do think home versus road with a young starter makes a bit of a difference when things are as close as they are, and this is definitely one of those cases. But good luck in your finals, Matt, and thanks for that question. Let's get to some of these pitchers that are available in a decent number of leagues, and I had Luis Ortiz first on the rundown. It seems like he's becoming a popular pickup heading into the weekend. I know Eno brought him up on Rates and Barrels yesterday as his prospect of the week. I think he was a guest on a podcast earlier in the week with James Anderson of RotoWire. They were talking about Ortiz together. I got outbid by Shelley in Maki for Luis Ortiz. So everyone loves Luis Ortiz right now, and the matchup this weekend is great. If you look beyond this weekend, it would be a road turn against St. Louis next week that you'd be picking him up for if you pick him up this weekend. The stuff numbers popped in Eno's model. That was a big part of why he liked him. The minor league numbers I thought were really good. The ERA was a little bit inflated because of a home run issue, and Luis Ortiz really doesn't have home run issues at other levels to be concerned about. So I do think this is kind of an underrated pitcher getting a late season opportunity who could be a pretty sneaky stream. The problem being, the Cardinals might need that game, and that's a really difficult opponent to match him up against.
Yeah, Ortiz is sort of the Tovar of pitchers. In a different situation, I would be pretty aggressive in bidding for him, but with him after lineups lock on Monday, him probably just having one start and that start being against the Cardinals, now there's a lot of other options. You know, this is, and again, it differs what your league's rules are. In writing the column this week, I made the assumption that people are playing the 10-day scoring period. Most of my leagues are doing that. So a pitcher with two starts, and you know, unless just the matchups are really horrible, they're just going to have an advantage over somebody like Ortiz who projects to get just one. So on that alone, and then the one start is potentially a tough one.
Yeah, there's a few things to keep in mind as you think about Luis Ortiz. If you're in a league with a keeper component, I think you are right to pick him up and possibly have him available as a cheap hold for next year. I think there is that type of ceiling in what he could bring to the table. Dre Jameson, I know we talked about him last week. He's passing all the tests so far. I think we mentioned that he had the same initial matchups as Ryan Nelson did upon arrival. And he gets another test after he faces the Giants this weekend. He'd go on the road to face Houston, which is another team that you don't really want to throw a young pitcher against, especially on the road, if you're kind of thinking about it from the bigger picture. And if it is one lineup period for the rest of the season, he'd also have a turn against the Brewers on the road on Monday, October 3rd. So what is your interest level in Dre Jameson, factoring in the matchups and the difficulty, at least of that first stop in Houston?
Well, because of the pitchers that we're about to talk about, I'm not really looking at Jameson in a 12-team league. It might be a situation where if I just really want to ensure that I have somebody I'm going to go very deep with my contingency bids, I wouldn't be completely afraid to use him with that potential two-step. But we're going to get to some pitchers who I like the matchups better. I like the certainty of the two starts better. And so for that reason, if Jameson were available in my 15-teamer, I would be fine with that, but much shallower. I would be making him a very low priority.
It's pretty cool to get excited about a guy that had a 6.95 ERA at AAA this season, though. Season's on the line. Tough matchups. I'm at least thinking about it. Like he's more of a contingency backup option if you just need someone to replace an injured pitcher than someone you're putting high in the priority list, because those matchups just... they're difficult. That's the bottom line for Dre Jameson. He's looked very good so far, though. Yet another reason to be excited about the Diamondbacks potentially in 2023. Hayden Wesneski has been a recent favorite on this pod. He's still pretty widely available. He's only rostered in 11% of CBS leagues at the time of this recording. So out there in plenty of places. The matchup as it currently lines up is home against the Phillies. Tough opponent, good environment, though. I think it's doable in terms of streaming and being sort of okay with it. Wesneski could get another turn at the Reds, either on the final day of the season or the second to last day of the season, depending on how the schedule falls. So what are you doing with Hayden Wesneski this weekend if he still has not been picked up in your league?
Well, he's definitely a must-add in my 15-teamers, no doubt about that. And with that roster rate, that suggests that there's a really good chance that he's going to be out there. 12-teamers, he'll be a contingent bid, and I can endorse him as a contingent bid a little bit better than I could with Jameson. Those matchups do worry me a little bit. Like you said, there's something in each of them to be a little worried about with the Reds. Just, you know, any start against a, you know, even a kind of decent Reds lineup, that could be really scary. The Phillies anywhere, potentially scary. So I don't love the matchups. I like what Wesneski has done. You do also have to keep in mind that he's had a very, very easy schedule so far. These will, I think, easily be the toughest matchups that he's had. He did face the Reds once, but it was at home. And then the other three matchups were all pretty favorable. So he's had that in his favor. He's also allowed a line drive rate of just about 10%, which is unsustainably low. So he's been good, probably just not quite as good as he has been. So I just worry about the uncertainty of how is he actually going to be against a much tougher opponent like the Phillies.
Yeah, I think he's going to end up in my lineup in our 16-team keeper league, because we do twice weekly changes and it's more just about getting anybody and everybody in. So I don't think I have enough starters going in the first part of the week to skip him. In other circumstances, I do think it's going to be more of a 14-15 team league for me to want to confidently put him out there against the team playing for its playoff lives with that Phillies matchup coming up on Thursday. Cody Morris, a favorite of mine, as he's been discussed at least three shows in a row now. Faith finally paying off against the Twins in his last start. Six innings, six Ks, one earned run, one walk. That was the key number, because he's had some control issues since coming up. 81 pitches in that outing, so I think we're seeing that Cody Morris is stretched out. He will be used like a regular starter so long as he pitches well. Gets another turn this weekend before... we'll have to make a decision on waivers, but remaining schedule, home against the Rays, home against the Royals. How does Morris stack up to the likes of Wesneski and Ortiz and Dre Jameson?
I like him a lot. I'm probably more excited about him than any pitcher we've talked about and any pitcher we're going to talk about. like you said, that one walk, very reassuring. Now, we don't want to maybe make too much of a single start, but by the same token, let's not make too much of the one start that Morris made. I think it was against the Angels where he walked five batters, and that's been the bulk of his walks across his four appearances so far. So the one thing that just stands out as a potential problem is the walks. That was really skewed by one performance. Other peripherals look great. Very low contact rate on swings on in-zone pitches for Morris. That's a stat that to me is really reassuring, and it's more granular. So you can look at somebody like Morris, who's only tossed about 15 innings, and say, okay, but on this, you know, per pitch and per swing basis, he's been highly effective, just getting a lot of whiffs in general. Now he's stretched out and he's got a great schedule the rest of the way. So yeah, he's definitely relevant for 12 teamers for this last week.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I have a question about someone who's already rostered pretty much everywhere, but are you in places where you might have him reserving Dustin May in a two-start week? I know people are frustrated that last time out against Arizona, he only went four innings, gave up five runs on seven hits. K's have been there pretty consistently for him since returning, you know, late August return against the Marlins. Weird schedule for May so far. Two against the Marlins, two against the Padres, one on the road in San Francisco. That was a five scoreless. And then this last outing at home against the Diamondbacks was a clunker. I'm still using him, especially in a two-start week. But am I running through some caution signs here?
I don't think so. I think it's a tough decision. And that's, you know, that for me is the key distinction to make here, because it's not that I think May is a must sit, but the fact that it's even a discussion at this point is probably not something you were expecting going into your final scoring period. So for me, it depends on my alternatives. I could start. I mean, this is for me hypothetical because I don't have him anywhere, but I could start May, but I could just as easily bench him if I feel better about my alternatives. And that's not even something I would have thought was a possibility when he first came back.
Yeah, I was trying to decide if I would sit him in a scenario if I were protecting ratios, and I don't think I could do it. I still think the skills look good. The stuff looks good. The consistency hasn't been there. But, I mean, think about it, right? If he's got two turns left this season, one of those has to be against the Rockies. And it's at home. It's not in Colorado. So I'm gonna cautiously go in and say he'll start to right the ship here in these last couple of turns before the regular season comes to a close. But I thought it was worth mentioning because it's not the easy lock him into your lineup that it should be for a two-start week. And for a guy that just has shown very good skills in the time that we've seen him in the big leagues. How about Michael Lorenzen? What is your interest level in Michael Lorenzen as a stretch run pickup?
Really, really high. He's right up there with me with Cody Morris. He's made three starts since coming back from a shoulder strain. He's been pretty good in each of those starts. The worst one was probably actually against the Astros, so you can maybe give him a mulligan because of the tough match, but tough matchup and the fact that that was his first start in more than 2 months after just coming off of the IL. So the two starts since then look great. He's been getting whiffs. He's got remaining starts against the A's. That's it. One home start, one road start. Matchups that you absolutely cannot argue with. Looking really good, even though he's just, you know, very recently on the IL. And he's RP eligible. So that's the thing. I mean, I'm in some head-to-head playoffs. There's that RP slot. It's really hard to pick up a closer right now and upgrade yourself for somebody to get saves. But you can pick up somebody like Lorenzo and put him in that slot and get two great matchups over the last week and a half.
Yeah, I think the matchups make me willing to trust them. If the matchups were closer to league average teams, I'd be a lot more careful just because the K's haven't been there. But Oakland is very streamable at this point. If you haven't been doing that, you've been missing some opportunities throughout this season. Bailey Ober should get two more starts between now and the end of the season. Only 23% rostered in CVS because of that lengthy stint on the IL. We talked about him a bit last week. Home against the White Sox, road against the Tigers. I think those matchups, especially with the Tigers matchup, it's good enough to go ahead and take that chance in most circumstances with Ober.
I think so. There are, you know, other options that we've talked about, like Morris and Lorenzen, Wisniewski, that I wouldn't even necessarily be making a contingent bid for Ober in 12-team leagues. I think there's just too many options that I like better, but nothing wrong with starting him in a 14 or 15-teamer. And like you said, very good chance that you could actually add him in those deeper leagues.
Josh Winder, pretty widely available right now, too. He'll get the White Sox twice to close out the regular season if the Twins' current starting pitching schedule holds as expected. Speaking of Bailey's, Bailey Falter, got to mention him again because they have a doubleheader coming up this week. And with that, he gets another turn in the rotation. And that turn looks like it's coming on the road against the Nationals. I'm here for that.
I am, too. I like that a lot. So we've talked a bit about being concerned about his place in the rotation rest of season. Of course, you know, that's one start there that you can count on. Maybe he gets another and maybe doesn't make the top of the list here, but definitely somebody I'm on the radar in 12 team leagues. And if you can somehow add him in deeper leagues, I'm not sure how likely that is, but if you can, definitely do it.
So I know we're probably 5 weeks now away from Halloween. Scary two-start pitchers for this week. If you're just chasing bulk, you just want innings. You need innings. You're just trying to catch lightning in the bottle. You're just trying to get lucky. I saw two that are almost universally available. Adrian Hauser, home against the Cardinals, home against the Marlins. Some innings concerns because of effectiveness. He's been throwing plenty of pitches. 82, 85, and 74 pitches his last three outings. Adrian Hauser has a 2.89 ERA and a 1.13 WHIP in September. And I think it's because I watched his worst start most closely. That just doesn't... I think it's an error. I read that and I wanted to complain. I wanted to send an email to Fangrasp like, hey, I think this is broken. And no, that's actually what has happened in September. So, you know, Miami is not a team you're ever worried about. But the Cardinals, especially going into American Family Field, it's a hitter-friendly environment. I think every single game still matters for the Brewers. They have to manage a guy like Hauser very carefully. If he's in any sort of trouble and they can bring in a fresh bullpen arm, he's going to leave that game early. So I just think there's a lot of risk like within the start itself because of all the circumstances around it. But what are you doing if you're just desperate for innings? Is Adrian Hauser an option or do you just turn somewhere else?
I don't know how available he would be in the leagues that are deep enough where I would need those innings because of a lack of other alternatives. So it's a tough spot to be. I mean, if he's available in really deep leagues, like we're talking almost certainly more than 15 teams, in that particular circumstance where I'm looking for bulk, bring it on. Cross your fingers.
I had to throw a name out there that is also widely available that I would definitely not want to start, or someone that I would prefer Hauser to, at least. And it's Corey Abbott, because Corey Abbott is with the Nationals, he's got a home matchup against Atlanta, and he's got a home matchup against Philadelphia, which is just a miserable two-step for the end of the season for a guy just currently holding onto a spot in that Nats rotation. I think part of it's just the win probability, too. the likelihood of him getting a win is so much lower than Hauser, because Hauser gets that second turn against the Marlins, which is easily the best start of any of the matchups those guys have.
Yeah, Abbott would not be a shoe-in to start for an NL-only team for me with those with those matchups. So yeah, I think that's all I can really say about that.
All right, let's move on to the last push for saves. This surprised me too when I was poking around the leaderboards earlier today. Domingo Acevedo has 4 saves in the last 2 weeks. He's tied for third. There are 5 other guys that also have 4 saves. There's a couple guys that have more. Very unexpected, because I thought AJ Puck was maybe emerging to take on that role for the A's. So if you're looking for saves, I think it's guys like Domingo Acevedo. It's frequently mentioned Jose Leclerc still getting some opportunities in that Rangers bullpen, or a take your chances on a Diamondbacks reliever, maybe between Reyes Maranta and Joe Manaply. They actually just combined to cop a lead against the Dodgers and lose a save opportunity on Thursday night. So is there anybody else that's on your radar, and are you interested in Acevedo as maybe the best option of that group?
I wouldn't say best option, because I'm actually have been starting Leclerc in, I mentioned before, a 12-team head-to-head team that's in a playoff. I've been starting Leclerc in that. So it's, you know, the high stakes part of the season. It's a relatively shallow league, and he's been coming through. He's been delivering. So I feel the best about Leclerc here. But I think if we are talking a little bit deeper of a league where Leclerc probably isn't available, then I'd be fine with Acevedo. I mean, at this point, if you're talking about needing saves, at this point, it's just somebody that you think is going to get the most chances. And obviously, the closer for the A's is ideally not that person that you're going to be counting on. But, you know, given what the closer pool looks like right now, he probably would be your best bet in a deeper league. And I'd be fine with it.
And with, like you said, 2 series between the Angels and A's, right? Talking about Taylor Ward earlier on. Well, the good news for Domingo Acevedo is the Angels are just bad, just like the A's. Yeah. So 2 bad teams play, save opportunities tend to pop up. So actually, I'm with you. If Leclerc's available, he's better. I think the skills there get a little overlooked. We're talking about a guy that's now over 200 innings for his career. He's missed a lot of time with injuries. 3.14 ERA, 1.20 whip, 315 strikeouts, over 234 and two-thirds innings for Jose Leclerc. It's really good. It's 12 Ks per nine. About 32% of the batters he's faced have struck out. And the thing that he's doing this season, he's walking batters at the lowest rate of his career, a 9.6% walk rate. A big step in the right direction for Leclerc skills-wise. If you don't add any established veterans to that bullpen in the offseason, I think he probably enters 2023 as the favorite to close in Texas. Not without competition. I think a healthy Joe Barlow could push him, because Barlow still looks like a pretty good skills play in the back end of that Texas rotation as well. Any other relievers that you've been thinking about here over the last week or so?
No, not really. Kyle Finnegan was somebody who kind of popped back up on my radar after having dropped him a couple of weeks ago. But I think that the two that we just talked about, Leclerc and Acevedo, in terms of closers who are likely to be helpful, that's what I would go for. And I think it's kind of past the time to be looking at non-closers, because even if you're looking at somebody who, you know, pitches bulk innings in relief, I don't know that there's anybody good enough that can help you with the, you know, maybe 3 or 4 innings that they'll give you rest of season. So it's really a pretty small pool at this point of relievers that could make any sort of difference.
Yeah, I think part of the reason the reliever section of the show gets a little thin for the last 6 weeks is there are teams that start to punt saves, and your league might actually have a more established option for saves available simply because someone else in the league decided they weren't chasing the category anymore. So the widely available players at this point in the year chasing that category tend to be pretty underwhelming, and I would agree with you. I would not bother with those bulk relievers right now if you can help it. I just think that's a particularly weird group of players to try and roster in the final days of the season. That's going to do it. It's our last waiver wire episode of the 2022 season. Al, it's been a blast doing these shows with you pretty much every week all season. I think we did, 24 out of 26 together, I think. We were here a lot. Again, we didn't move across the country during the season, so that seemed to help quite a bit, but it was a great time doing the show with you.
Likewise. So glad that I had the opportunity to be here on these Fridays with you. And I've enjoyed the format. I've enjoyed the questions that everybody's contributed to the show. And been a blast, DVR. Been great working with you.
Yeah, and shout out to the handful of folks that have checked in throughout the year on the actual live stream. No idea if we'll have the live stream portion of this pod in the future. We've tried a couple different times in the last couple seasons, and we're happy to have a few people that tag along and ask questions. We appreciate you and everybody who listened to the podcast version, of course, throughout the year as well. If you made it all season and you didn't buy a subscription to The Athletic, you could, make our bosses happy by buying one for $1 a month for the first 6 months at theathletic.com/fantasybaseballpodcast. Give Al a follow on Twitter at AlMelchiorBB. Give me a follow at Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast returns on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.